Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. And welcome to Behind the Curtain, everybody. This is Paul Lisnick, and we're going to start off with some politics on this show because we are so close to Election Day. And, you know, when you're into politics, I know you're heading to the voting booth. I know you'll do your civic duty, whatever side of the aisle you're on. But we want to do what we can to make sure everybody understands their responsibility and duty to vote, and even some of those who seem to complain a lot about it but then don't actually vote. So I couldn't find a better person to talk about this with than one of my favorites on she's television, talk radio star, incredibly popular performer, Stephanie Miller. You probably or you may listen to the Stephanie Miller Show. It's heard, of course, around the country, but in Chicago, it is heard on WCPT from 8 to 11 a.m. every weekday. I had the pleasure of working with her some years back when she debated Michael Medved, and I got to stand in between them and keeping the fisticuffs low, where they did a great job. She's coming into town really soon. We'll tell you about that, too. But for now, Stephanie Miller, welcome to the podcast. Good to talk to you.
Paul, you read that introduction exactly as I wrote it, and I appreciate that. You are a professional, sir.
And yet, I was ad-libbing, so even trick you in the process, because I think so highly of you, it's easy enough to say great things about you. Hey, so let's
get this. There's 1 degree of separation with radio nerds like us.
Isn't it true? And especially political radio nerds.
Yes, we have several radio nerd connections.
We do.
My old partner there, Big John Howell, who I did Morning Drive on WCKG with back in the day in the 80s, and my former executive producer here, you know, and I know it's amazing.
World.
There's like 7 of us in radio.
Yeah, and in the political world, you know what? I was going to do this, but now I don't know. Now I'm thinking of connections. But can we tell? There may be some listeners here who don't actually know your personal tie to politics because it's a pretty close one, and it's not the side of the aisle people might expect.
That's right. Yeah, my dad ran with Barry Goldwater in 1964. He was the vice presidential candidate. He was chairman of the Republican Party, congressman for 14 years, former prosecutor at Nuremberg, and he, ran with Goldwater. And, you know, interestingly, here's my full circle Chicago connection. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
Is Watergate prosecutor Jill Winebanks is a new friend and guest on my show, and she will be on the panel at Sexy Liberal Chicago next Saturday with, with Representative Jan Schakowsky. But anyway, as Jill and I have talked about on my show, it was my dad's running mate, Barry Goldwater, that was the one that went to the White House to ask Nixon to step down.
Wow.
And, you know, we just had this discussion this morning on my show, is like, where is today's Republican Party? Barry Goldwater. Like, who is going to be the one to tell Trump it's time to go?
Well, Barry Goldwater were around today, I'm fairly sure he might be seen as a Democrat.
Yeah. I mean, this is not my dad or Goldwater's party, that's for sure. I mean, look at all of the prominent Republicans, Paul, that have left the Republican Party. I mean, look at Max Boot said, this party needs to be burned to the ground. This version of this party, this Trumpist version, needs to be burned to the ground so that from the ashes we can build a reasonable, decent center-right party in this country again.
You know, I recently,
and I agree with him.
I recently had
I think they are all complicit. I think they're, you know, I was just watching TV before I talked to you about they are complicit in this murder of a Washington Post journalist that clearly the president is trying to help them cover up because he has financial ties. I mean, it's just every day, Paul, it's like feels like there's another impeachable, indictable offense, right?
What's fascinating to watch is this is not even about being Republican. I had Rick Wilson on my show a few weeks ago, the author of Everything Trump Touches Dies. You know who he is.
And
he is this conservative. He's a conservative Republican. And when I asked him sort of, why are you still in the party? Because I'm fighting to save it. I don't recognize this party, just what you've been saying. And when you look at Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and all the folks who during the election seemed to just put Trump, you know, into a corner saying this is going nowhere. And you're right now. You know, if the Democrats don't take control of the House in November, and everything looks up in the air right now, there was a time people thought Democrats might take the Senate. That's probably not going to happen. But the point of it is, when the Mueller report
I am happy clappy, Paul. I never say never.
Okay.
I am. If we learned anything from 2016, is do not listen to the pundits or the polls. Just get out there and vote. I am not willing to concede the Senate. I think that there is an enormous wave of anger out there, and it is female, and it is, you know, people of color, and I really feel like we're going to turn out at historic levels, because I think this is just enough. You know, I mean, I talk to listeners all the time. This isn't even partisan. How do you parent in this country? How do you tell your kids you shouldn't call a woman horse face? I mean, you know, I don't know how many different ways he can degrade this country and this office.
One of the questions I get asked in my role here at WGN is, does that make a difference? And my sense of it is, Stephanie, it just doesn't. Not for him.
Yeah.
He can pretty much say anything, do anything. Listen, we know his famous line of a couple of years ago, I can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. And the truth is, he can say horse face and anything he wants, and his supporters find it funny, or however they find it. But they basically just say, you know what, it's baked in the cake, it's part of who he is, but look, he just got two conservative justices on the Supreme Court. That's the beginning and end of the story.
Yeah, one of whom is an attempted rapist, alcoholic perjurer. I mean,
that was never proven. So we don't. And the president said, I think again, he says it every day, but he said again today, there was a totally innocent guy. We don't know what happened with
Please, yeah, it's amazing how you can be innocent when the FBI won't talk to 40 witnesses, right? I mean, it's. You know,
but
I think everybody
wins,
knows
right?
that was a complete sham.
If Democrats don't go to the polls, then the winning that he's been doing for the last couple of years, that just continues for two more years.
Yeah, well, you can call it winning.
Well, from his perspective.
But I call it America losing, you know, because it affects all of us. I mean, look at how amazing is it that 3 weeks before the election, Mitch McConnell is telling you he's going to need to cut your Medicare and Social Security because the Republicans passed another huge tax cut for the top 1% and has blown up the deficit. And now is going to come for your Medicare and Social Security, which is exactly what all the Democrats warned about. I mean, there is just no way to get our democracy back, but to have a blue tsunami. I mean, this is not the way our country was designed to, you know, to go. Like it's checks and balances. You know what I mean? Like this is not, they're not doing any meaningful checks and balances or oversight. I mean, it's. I mean, it's terrifying. It really is.
It is true.
I mean, and interestingly, it's going to affect races where you are, because Sean Casten is someone I really like, who I've had on my show and I've met. Pete Rostrum is one of the people that wrote this tax bill.
Peter Roskam, and when he's coming to my show actually later this week.
And people like Bob Corker at the time were like saying, "What are we doing? This is going to blow up the deficit." But of course, he voted for it. You know, this is what I mean. This is today's Republican Party. They're just spineless cowards in the face of this lunatic.
Well, so let me. Here's the pushback that you can address, which is, if you're right about the impacts of the tax plan and what passed, here's the thing. All of us got a tax break. Forget the millionaires for a moment. All of us got that tax break, which we get to enjoy for a few years before it sunsets. So the thing is.
Well, you must make a lot more money over there at WGN than I do, because I didn't. I mean, I don't. You know, it. Honestly, I mean, I think it's already been, you know, basically admitted to that this only went to corporate. I mean, they're the only ones that are. It's the top 1%, and the corporations are the ones that. Are benefiting, not me anyway.
But
not
provisions
most of us.
like what's called the SALT provision, which will affect Illinois. My point is, none of these things take effect yet. So right now, no one's feeling the pain of it, because some things don't kick in until you pay your 2018 taxes in 2019. The point is, Stephanie, it's all after the November election. And then, by the way, those provisions that do give some breaks to middle class, those go away right after the presidential election. It's also brilliant planning, if you want to look at it from that strategy, to make sure provisions don't kick in until after you get to vote.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to give them points for being devious, but I think that, you know, Matt Taibbi and Rolling Stone and certainly others, a lot of top economists have said, you know, this happens every time with Republicans. They give tax cuts to the rich. They now throw in Trump's trade war, stupid tariffs, which are certainly affecting people in Illinois, and you know, then you add to that the rising interest rates, and he is going to put us in another recession. And as usual, a Democrat's going to have to get us out of it.
Why,
I mean,
Why do you think people voted kind of, well, the other thing that they kind of concerns people, of course, the health care bill. I know one of the things Peter Roskam has said, and I'm sure he'll say it on my show this week, is, you know, pre-existing conditions are going to be saved. The one thing, because I'm also a lawyer, that I'm going to be asking Congressman Roskam is, well, when you say that preconditions will be preserved, why does the Sessions Attorney General Department file a brief with the government essentially asking the courts to overturn the pre-existing conditions? They're actually affirmatively trying to
get
rid of it.
The Republicans that have been voting over and over again to take it away, and they're all lying, Paul. They're all lying on the campaign trail that, oh, we're the ones that are going to protect your pre-existing. That is exactly the opposite of what's true, you know. And so I think you're right. It's interesting. You know, Paul, I don't think that they're not running on the tax cuts because they know people, I mean, really are not, you know, benefiting, except, again, like I say, the top 1%. They're not running. I mean, Democrats are running on health care now because, the worm and the tide and whatever you want to say has turned in a lot of ways. And
let me take you away from the economy for a moment.
By the way, when Trump says, oh, this Kavanaugh thing is really helping, and it's that is not the case. The majority of Americans did not want Kavanaugh confirmed, and the majority of Americans believe Dr. Ford and not Kavanaugh. So, you know, I think, you know, there are a lot of real investigations that need to be done and real oversight. And I think that's one of the most important things is the Democrats having subpoena power.
What is your explanation for, I'm going to shift from the economy. I know people will be voting their pocketbooks in the economy and the healthcare. It's critical that we started there. But one of the things that does surprise me is, I mean, if anybody was the party of look out for Russia, look out for those guys, it's the Republicans. And it was the Democrats who were sort of soft on that. And right now you have Trump supporters essentially believing that Trump has Putin under control and Kim Jong-un is under control and all these things are under control. And 40% of the country buys it.
Well, I mean, it's a sickness, Paul, at this point. When you have signs at Trump rallies that say, thank you, Russia. So they're saying they don't care if we have our democracy or our sovereignty as long as they win. I mean, that's Trumpism. They don't care if a hostile foreign power has installed illegitimately a president in our country, which is exactly what happened. I mean, look at Trumpism and it, like this the Saudi this whole Saudi situation. And a United States permanent resident Washington Post reporter is brutally dismembered while he's alive, and Trump is lying to help cover it up. And remember all the Trumpers, they loved his Muslim ban, hate Muslims, hate, you know, and these are most of the 9/11 hijackers were Saudi Arabian, but now they're fine because Trump says they're fine. Because Trump makes money from them and his family makes money from them. I mean, I've just never seen so much corruption in one place in my entire life. I mean, he's on tape talking about how much money he gets from Saudi Arabia. And he's like, oh, okay, so those Muslims are okay. We want to ban all the rest of the Muslims. But, I mean, it's just, it's head spinning every day to me, Paul. It really is.
You remember at the beginning of his term, he had that press conference where he had that table full of folders and folders with all the documents that were going to remove his control from all of the Trump entities.
Blank.
So, and of course, none of that was, from what we understand, all that was blank paper, but certainly we know none of that ever happened. So we have violations of the Emoluments Clause potentially going on all the time. The variety is, once again, Trump supporters just don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean is astounding, is this is a sickness. All of these former Republicans that are speaking out now, and they're speaking out with a passion and urgency, I think sometimes even more than Democrats, because of this is not just their country, their party, that's just being destroyed.
So turnout of African-Americans, Stephanie, turnouts of young people, the interest among young people, I know you've seen the surveys, 35%. You know, one of the things I've always questioned, I don't care which side of the aisle you're on, you'll take 12 hours to make a sign and go march in the streets and deal with crowds and take public transportation, all the craziness, when you could take 10 minutes and vote.
Right.
But afterwards, when they're not happy with whatever the results are, they are right there to protest and march in the streets. And
right.
I don't get, what does it take to get young
people?
That better
change this time, or we're not going to have anything, we're not going to have a democracy to march in.
What does it take to get young people to just do their duty and go vote?
I know. I'm from the tough love, philosophy. I say we cut their avocado toast budget. If you're a parent of a millennial.
Oh, you Californian, you.
If you're a patriot, you will nag them to death until they vote.
Yeah, but you want him voting if you want him voting your way. So you'll get, you know, once again, it also seems, it looks like Republicans always come home and get to the polls. Democrats, for some reason, just have a sense of, I'm just not doing this. That's a general statement.
Well, yeah, although, I mean, certainly that's not what I think the polling and the wisdom is this time. So, but we'll see. You're right. I mean, we'll see. Certainly we're, and that's what I mean. I don't want to, honestly, I want to listen to any polls or pundits at this point. But,
well, how concerned,
you know, certainly Democrats are up, what, 13 points in the generic, you know.
How concerned are you in places like Georgia where the Secretary of State, who's also the Republican nominee for governor, making really concerted efforts to be sure that lots of folks, only 70% minorities, are not voting, and North Dakota. I'm sure you follow that if you're a Rachel Maddow fan.
I hope that we just get a version of the Republican Party that actually can win without cheating, because so far they haven't. I mean, I you know, and that's, if you really want to have a battle of ideas, I mean, I think they know they're losing the generational battle, they're losing the demographic battle, they're losing the battle of ideas on pretty much every subject. They agree with the Democratic position, and I think it is disgusting to me that they don't care that Russia absolutely, you know, there is no, I mean, honestly, at this point, I think, you know, we can wait till Mueller is done, but there's absolutely no way that he would have won without Russia's help. And now this is a new version of it. You know, just in case Russia doesn't help this time, they are laser targeting as you say, Democratic voters in Georgia and North Dakota. And I mean, all we can do at this point is try to swarm the polls to such a degree that we can take the levers of power back and change all these ridiculous voter suppression laws and voter ID things and all this stuff that is, I mean, you know, it is clearly unfair, Paul, when you go, like, really? Because Heidi Heitkamp barely won last time on the Native American vote, you had to find a way to make sure they can, I mean, and so there you go. They have to have a physical address. Well, they know full well they don't have physical addresses. They have P.O. boxes, and so they could have let, like, tribes in general then be able to change that to do the 911 thing and get the car. They said no. Everyone's got to jump through these hoops individually because, you know, it just couldn't be more blatant.
Do you have any doubt?
African Americans in Georgia, it could not be more blatant that, and how is that fair? That the guy that's running is still running the election and 70% of the voters he's trying to purge are African American. I mean, it's just because he's running against the first African American woman to run. I mean,
that's what I say. This should be the impetus that gets people out there to vote. Because, listen, I'm sure you would agree, if Democrats don't take back the House or the Senate, the Mueller report, once it gets issued, is going to be killed.
Yeah. And who thinks it's fair that, you know, in Texas, because Beto O'Rourke is doing so well, that they're trying to tell college kids, oh, you can't vote because your address isn't here. It's like, well, of course it's not here. You know what I mean? They still have, do you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't use a student ID, but you can use a gun ID. Like, it's so obviously skewed toward Republican voters, right? I mean, it's...
But you have votes on the Supreme Court, which heard, of course, the case the other day about the North Dakota situation, and the court goes 6-2, I think it was. 6-2,
yeah.
Basically saying...
And gutted the Voting Rights Act because racism is all over, as the John Roberts Court has said, right? I mean, it's...
So that's what I'm saying. I don't know where the turnaround is, because it's things seem so ingrained, the changes are so deep, that this is hard to come back from already.
I agree, but I think we can do it. I mean, I always call myself the happy clappy liberal, Paul, but I do believe, because when, you know, as Bill Clinton always used to say, when people vote, Democrats win. And of course, that's what they're afraid of. But, you know, as my friend Malcolm Nance always says, this could be our last election. You know what I mean? This is not just the most important election. You're absolutely right, Paul. I mean, we are so far gone at this point, you know, that we have got to get the levers of power back, or you're right, Democrats will never win again by the time they, you know.
Well, that's why people do have to get
out to prevent more Democrats from voting. I mean, it's so uniquely un-American, Paul, and unfair to try to prevent, you know, to just not be winning elections without cheating.
It would be great if everybody played fairly. Hey, before I lose you, I do want people to know that on Saturday, October 27th, you're going to be in Chicago, not alone. Yeah. You're going to have some friends there for the sexy liberals' return to the actually, it's Join the Resistance as the sexy liberals' return, I should say, to the Athenaeum Theater on the 27th. I got to be honest, it's pretty close to sold out. So many tickets have been sold, but that doesn't mean people should make an effort because there could be some to go. Well, WCPT may be giving some away.
Paul, but there is my station WCPT, I think, is still giving some tickets away, and you never know. Sometimes theaters hold a few tickets till the last minute, so there may be some single ones floating around, but right now it is technically sold out. But yeah, this one is the Sexy Liberal Blue Wave Tour, and we are, our cause for this version of the tour is Tom Steyer's Need to Impeach, Need to Vote group. So, you know, we always have a cause, and this tour is all about getting out the vote and the blue wave. So, yeah, and it's me and Margaret Cho, who I'm so excited is joining the tour for the first time.
Great.
In Chicago, John Fugelsang, who, of course, is brilliant. And then, as I said, my panel is Representative Jan Schakowsky and Watergate attorney Joe Weinbanks. So we're really excited. I mean, it's really a great group and a great panel. And I'm just, you know, I just love Chicago. As you know, I used to work there.
Yeah.
And we sell out every time, and I'm just so grateful to Chicago. I just love Chicago, and it feels like a second hometown since I've lived there and done radio there. And, you know, whether we're at Chicago Theater or the Athenaeum, we've sold out every time we're there, and I just I'm so grateful, you know, and just love. I always love the Chicago shows.
In addition to the panel, will there be, because you have people like Margaret Cho, is there some stand-up portion of the show?
Oh, yeah, that's what it is, Paul. It's a stand-up show. All three of us do stand-up sets. Me and then John and then Margaret Cho, and then the panel is at the end of the show for the last, you know, say half hour, 20 minutes or half hour, where we, you know, talk about obviously whatever the latest issues of the day are with our panel guests. And so anyway, yeah,
well,
so we are excited.
And it's, by the way, the website where people can check out tickets, see if there's something there, is sexyliberal.com. Perfect website.
That's
sexyliberal.com.
Right.
It is at the Athenaeum Theater. That's at 2936 North Southport on Saturday, October 27th. Just one show, 8 p.m. You're not adding in a whole bunch of midnight shows and stuff, huh?
No, just in and out. That's it.
And on to the next step.
Mama's got an early schedule.
I gotcha. Well, and I know you've got a busy schedule, and I thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thanks,
people,
Paul.
And again, if you aren't able to get tickets for sexyliberal.com, at least listen to WCPT every morning, 8 to 11, where you can hear the Stephanie Miller show, obviously lively and you know, great guests. And listen, if you're conservative, if you're Republican, you got to hear both sides. That's how you stay smart. I watch at night. I watch Fox and MSNBC and CNN. I watch everybody. Mm-hmm. I got to know what everybody's doing. I'm sure you do too, right?
Yeah. No, and I could tell you how many times right wingers call or write or whatever and say, I don't agree with anything you say, but you're funny as hell. And, you know, I just feel like we have to laugh. We have got to laugh, or we would just cry all day these days, you know. So.
Stephanie Miller, the Sexy Liberal Blue Wave Tour, coming on Saturday, October 27th. But the real purpose of this call is, Stephanie, you want people to vote.
Yes, yes, yes. Do it, do it, do it. Vote blue no matter who.
Thanks for your time, Stephanie. We'll talk
to
you soon.
I was singing in the rain. I was calling out your name. I'm not ashamed of love. It's a song without a sound. Makes the stars fall to the ground. I put the blame on love. Tears are just made of water. So crash me into the sea. You will never be alone, because the arms of love dance so sweetly. Don't be afraid of love.
And you've just been listening to some new theme song music for a new web series that you will be able to listen to starting on October 22nd, Monday, October 22nd. And depending on when you're hearing this podcast, who knows? Maybe it's after that date and you can go check it out. But it's called Studio B. And I'll just even say this now, say it later. The website is going to be studiobseries.com. And so they've allowed me to watch some episodes, and so I'll tell you that this is all about some Chicago musicians, actors, improvisers, stand-up, songwriters, collaborating on this web series called Studio B, which was very fun. I felt like I was kind of watching The Office. We'll find out if that was an accurate thing to say. But let me introduce my guests to you so that they can tell you what it is this is all about. Billy Bungaroff is the director of this series, a writer of the series. He himself is a Jeff Award winner. He's a musician. Chicago's his home. That's what's so important. Billy, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate that.
Thanks. It's fantastic to be here.
All right. And Julie B. Nichols, she's responsible for the music, but she's an alumna of the Second City main stage. So we know that with your work there in design and composition and music over the course of many reviews, that this is also a fabulous series, which I can attest to already. Julie, welcome to you.
Oh, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So when I read a description about this Studio B series, basically it was described as something that was so Chicago, it's just kind of like eating deep dish pizza. I sort of like that description. But that what that really says is that's what this the humor and the warmth of this is all about. So Billy, I'll start with you. I said I kind of felt like I was watching a different kind of version of The Office. Is that a fair thing to say? If not, go ahead and distinguish it.
Oh, no. I think it is a fair thing to say. I love, you know, and I think I would speak for Julie as well. I love both versions of The Office so much. And, you know, it's in some ways hard to make a comedy that's a workplace comedy that takes place in the workplace that doesn't have an influence of that because it was such a seminal show. But, you know, The Office is a corporate world, and Julie and I, we're not necessarily from the corporate world. We're from this sort of hodgepodge of music and comedy world that we've been in. So we thought it would be really interesting, you know, to do a show that took place in the workplace of the recording studio, because there's so many bizarre personalities and there's so much daily, you know, babysitting and all sorts of bizarre things that really have to happen for, you know, a hit song to be made. So for us, it was taking that sort of workplace comedy that people are familiar with, whether it's, you know, a diner or a corporate office, and taking it to the recording studio.
Not only babysitting, but dog sitting, too, at least in one episode. Julie, I'm all about dogs, so I love that. I won't say anything more about that. People can go watch it online. But, Julie, when it comes to the music of all of this, first of all, what I found interesting, not only is the theme song really cool, but, you know, even in the, I mean, in some of the episodes, the music is kind of, I don't know, meant to be funny. It's not exactly something maybe that you might hear because of, I'm thinking of the second episode where it's sort of an interesting little play on words and phrases. But then, like the final episode, the third episode, I shouldn't say final, third episode, there's like really good music in there. So talk about the importance of the music in the show. And is there sort of thoughts of maybe eventually there's a CD out of this or something like that? Because some of this music's really good.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, absolutely. We want to use this as a vehicle to release a lot of music. And something that I've always wanted to do, and I know Billy's wanted to do too, is, you know, have a musical or a TV show or a web series or whatever that just has genuinely good music. And with my background at Second City and having worked in comedy music for over 10 years, I was excited to write some more comedy music. And, you know, I'm well-versed in that. But I also have all these songs that, you know, are not comedically based, which for a long time in my career, I haven't been able to really put out there. So this was such a great vehicle for me to be able to incorporate music in that way.
Some of the characters are very funny, and they're really, I'm curious, Billy, are some of these characters, I'm guessing maybe all of them are actually based on somebody, probably, but some of them are kind of really kind of crazy folks.
Every single one of them is based on
And can you please give us the real names at this point so we know exactly who we're talking about?
Names and addresses.
Names
please.
And addresses.
I will say, from every recording studio that I've been in, you know, overzealous interns are commonplace. And at the same time, some of those interns go on to like be fantastic, you know, fantastic musicians or turn up somewhere later. You know, just sort of genius, producers who come with their own baggage is something that I've, you know, I've worked with many times.
So the intern in this show, Max, and I won't say because it's really how you meet him up front is really pretty funny, I think. But the point is, so he's real. I mean, he's kind of, there are many Maxes around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I think every studio, you know, every studio has an army of them working on staff.
And so, yeah, we'll go ahead. And some of the characters, I mean, some of them do seem a little bit way out. Are the plots all fun?
Like,
Go ahead.
One of my very close friends who runs his own studio, you know, told me a story about a lead singer basically wanting to break up with the band, and he wanted to have the producer do it in the middle of the session. You know, there's so much drama that happens behind the scenes of making a record. You know, because tensions are high and emotions are high. That a lot of this is actually just pulling from real stuff, as crazy as it sounds.
So, Julie, there's three episodes right now. That's what people will be able to see on the 22nd. So I kind of have, of course, when it was done, I'm like, well, I kind of want to watch more. Each one is really kind of self-contained. It's probably useful to, you do need to watch the first one first, I think, because that explains some things. But tell me the theory moving forward, because it's a web series. So is the hope that it gets picked up by a network? Tell me about the purpose behind the creation of it all.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to be able to make more, because, I mean, there's just no shortage of things that we can, you know, explore, and how the story can grow, and artists we can bring in. One of the reasons we wanted to do it, of course, is to, sell it to a network or get brand sponsorship or people to invest in it to be able to make more of them. We were lucky enough to work with Optimus in the city, who's a production company, and they provided the space. We actually built the studio in the fourth floor of their own offices. Which was a real trip. You know, we moved a lot of our own personal stuff and borrowed a lot of gear, and they just let us kind of take over the fourth floor of their building, which was incredible, and they gave us a lot of support and post-production and stuff. So, you know, we hope to keep a relationship with them, because they were really wonderful and supportive during the whole thing. Aaron Porzel was the editor who put it together, who works there, who's a true treat and genius. We just wanted to keep growing because, like Billy said, there's just so many characters and stories and weirdos and geniuses that we know, you know, from our own experience, both in theater and in recording studios and in the music industry, that, like, there's just no shortage of things to draw from to keep making these things.
And we should give some credit, because while you are, you know, one of the writers, Billy, I mean, you've got help from Ryan Asher and TJ Jagodowski and Asia Martin. I mean, there's a lot of people that are part of, and some of those writers you actually see in the show, right? I mean, who play.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who are also in the show. So this has to be a great release for so many of you. Now, all of these scenes that we'll see now, they all take place within the music studio. Is there thought of saying that if this grows, we continue, we're going to leave the studio and have some scenes elsewhere?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. Yeah, as Julie said, the idea is, you know, this is showing people what we can do, and the idea is to figure out a way to make more. And I could see, you know, I would love to explore these characters more, and I would love to explore the world of music more. You know, both Julie and I, have been musicians, have toured. We know that part of the game too. I'm just hoping this opens the door for us to really, tell a story that we find very, very interesting about, you know, what it actually means to be a working musician and make, you know, and make music.
I found it to be very fun. And by the way, this is free, right, Julie? So, I mean, when we're telling people to go online and watch it at StudioBeatSeries.com, it's free to us. So
free.
I have to ask. So is this about, do you sell advertising down the line? Obviously, I know you're doing this from the goodness of the heart, from your creative juices. But at the same time, this needs to become something that takes hold. So what can people do? If people watch it and they like it, is there a way for them to give you feedback? What do you want folks to do?
Well, people, you know, our website is set up for people to get in touch with us. So if there are people who watch it and they think, man, this is amazing, I'd love to be part of this, I'd love to be in it, I'd love to invest in it. Oh, I know this amazing company who would love to have placement in this, you know, like, absolutely reach out to us. Our goal is to keep creating and to keep making things, you know. People can, I think going through the website, people can find us online and our own socials and stuff. And, you know, that's the world now. It's like things are on social media and things are on the internet, and it's like for everyone to get involved in.
Well, I don't think there's any question. Again, as I watched it, some of these characters, truly, you know, you can just see them sort of. And again, my mind goes back to The Office, but some of those people take on a life of their own, and they're so defined. And you've really done that with some of the characters here, even some that are in just an episode, like the music star, for example, of an episode here. And there are some great characters that I hope would return in the future, because I just so enjoyed it. I want to encourage everybody to check it out starting October 22nd. Now, is that midnight? Is there some magic moment?
Well, we have a launch party on October 22nd, which is this coming Monday. Well, whenever you're listening to it, maybe you've already been to the party and you had a great time.
Yeah,
it's free and open to the public. You can go to our website, www.studiobseries.com, and register for the party. It's free, free booze, and we have some great sponsors. We have Temperance Beer and Tito's and Dollop Diner, and we're going to have, and Dave Mata is spinning. So it's going to be a really fun night. And then we have a screening at 7:30. And then I believe midnight is when the episodes will go live, or at least the first episode will go live.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, people will be able to check it out pretty soon.
Where, and can you say where the party's going to be, the opening party on the 22nd?
Yeah, it's at the Joinery in Logan Square. And, again, people can just go. You need to register, even though it's free. You just need to register online so we know you're coming.
Right. Fantastic. The website, again, is Studio B Series, and that's B, the letter B, StudioBSeries.com. Again, as somebody who's already watched it, I encourage everybody to check this out. It's funny. If you can't get enough of those kind of mockumentaries, or whatever you want to call them, that Christopher Guest used to do, it's that flavor. That's just what this is. It's The Office. It's Christopher Guest. It's all that stuff. But in a music setting with some great music, which I think was brilliant to do, because that means it has, you know, life afterwards. Actually, Christopher Guest was brilliant enough to do that, too. Was Christopher Guest and those guys a role model for either of you?
Absolutely.
I mean, forever. Absolutely. And okay. Always.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it would have to be.
100%.
Yeah, it would have to be. It's amazing stuff. I hope, let's send a note to him and get him to tune in on this too.
Absolutely. Get him on an episode.
Exactly. Studio B. I've actually played in the same theaters he has, which is about as close as I've gotten to him. But anyway, in New York, Town Hall, where they filmed Mighty Wind. I performed on the stage of Town Hall, and all I could think of was them doing Mighty Wind there. Yeah. StudioBSeries.com is the website. Billy Bungaroth and Julie B. Nichols, congratulations on this. Good luck on this. And I'm sure we'll touch base on this again down the line, too, as things sort of kick off. And I hope everybody will check out the party on October 22nd. You can't make the party. Start watching the web series at midnight. It's must-see web TV, right? So
yeah.
Thank you guys for being with me. Billy, Julie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Sir, who will be the first brave lad to come and take the king's shilling? Who will lead the way? I'm looking for boys with hearts of oak. Lads, what love their king and country. Men, what hates the lousy Hun.
And then the first one stepped forward. I recognized him instantly. It was Big Jimmy Parsons, the boy Charlie had eaten the Goonies. Egged on with a cheering crowd ever since.
That's just a bit, a flavor of a new show in Chicago called Private Peaceful. By Michael Morpurgo. It's playing over at the Greenhouse Theater Center over on Lincoln Avenue. And I got to tell you, when I got a notice about this show, I thought to myself, another show comes to Chicago. Well, they're all wonderful, I'm sure, whatever. But I didn't think much of it until I saw that this was written by the celebrated author of what was an international hit that I've seen, I don't know how many times, War Horse. So you may have seen War Horse either on Broadway or in Chicago. What an amazing show that was. So to know that the author, the playwright, has put another story out, this time called Private Peaceful, I said, I got to talk to the guy who's starring in this. And this is a one-man show. One man will play. I'm pretty sure it's about 40 different roles. I don't know how he's going to do it. I just need one of him today, and that's Shane O'Regan, the star of this show. Shane, you just get to be Shane for this interview today.
That's great. That's finally I can just be myself.
Exactly. You don't get to do that often. Now, you are from Ireland, correct? Because I kind of hear that in your voice.
Indeed, yes. I'm from Dublin.
And so, I've never been there. I'll have to come out there and take me to dinner or something. But anyway, this is a show. It's already had great success through Ireland. You've just now coming to the U.S. Talk to me about, first of all, what the play is about, and then we'll talk about its little history. What is Private Peaceful all about?
So Private Peaceful follows the journey of Tomo Peaceful, he's a young guy from the west country of England in Devon in Italy. And he, we basically just follow his whole life. And you see him join the army at too young of an age. He joins at 16 and goes off to fight in World War One. And through complications, he's ends up court-martialed. And throughout this story, you find out why, and you find out the whole reasons behind it and everything.
And I know that involves, he's got an elder brother named Charlie involved, all sorts of people, but you play every role. Am I right that it's sort of like about 40 roles? Is that right?
Yeah, so like there's about 40 roles, but not all of them speak. In speaking terms, there's 24.
Oh, only 24. Well, that's not as impressive. I'm totally kidding. That's not, so you have to talk to me about that, since we're just watching Shane on stage take these 40 roles, 24 or so of which who will speak. How do you do that? I can barely handle one.
Yeah, it took a while to kind of get into it, but it was really just about, you know, fleshing out each of the characters as if they were my only character, just so, you know, so I can flip into them and not be a caricature, not be, you know, be this real person and give them as much attention as any other character that I would play. Now I'm so into it because I've done the show so many times, it's a lot easier. But in the beginning, there was definitely a difficulty of, like, you know, how am I going to do this? But it was definitely a fun challenge, but it's a very rewarding at the same time, because the show is just it's a gift to as a performer. Like, it's a brilliant show to be able to do, and I feel so privileged to be able to speak the words of Michael Merpurgo.
So now I have to ask you this question. Were you ever on stage doing Tomo, let's say, and all of a sudden you went, oh my God, I'm doing Charlie right now. Did you ever find yourself sort of doing, I'm doing the wrong character?
Literally, funnily enough, happened in New York when we were off Broadway. At one point, there were certain movements to do with the characters. Right at the beginning of the show, one of them is giving another a piggyback. Charlie's giving Tomo a piggyback. And I was doing the movements of giving somebody a piggyback but being Tomo, so I like mixed it up in my head and I was like, oh. So I just continued on and hoped the audience didn't notice.
Wait, it's probably so early they didn't catch on. Yeah, I love it.
Exactly, yeah. They're only just getting into the whole motif of changing characters. So.
Now, obviously what we can't do is, and I've seen some video with you. We played that clip leading into this, and of course it's also there's video that goes with that. So you're wearing a certain kind of uniform, well, outfit. It's not a uniform, but it's clothing. Do you change outfits for these characters, or do we just get, does Shane kind of keep that one outfit on?
No, yeah, so we open up with Tomo in a barn, and he's in his World War One uniform. It's an authentic World War One uniform that we have, and that's it. Like, you know, he starts off with just his shirt on and his trousers and everything, but then throughout the show I fully don the entire uniform at one point, so that's pretty much the only change. It's all just done through voice and movement is what we decided to change the characters through.
Gotcha. Now, before you got involved in this, and again, so people, we haven't seen this show here yet. I mean, it's actually playing now as people are hearing this over at the Greenhouse Theater. But what sucked me in was just that it's from the same writer as War Horse. So I have to believe you were familiar with War Horse before this. So for folks who loved War Horse, are they in for an equally moving moment in this show?
Oh, absolutely. It's such a beautifully written piece. There's this brilliant music to the script, is what I kind of call it, that you literally get to watch this character age on stage, because we start the play and he tells the story from the age of five, you know, all the way up through his life. And it's incredible, just the way it's written and the detail in it. Like, it made my job so much easier, how well he's written this play. And it's such a, like, sweeping narrative that, you know, we start off in England and then we go to France and Belgium, and it's all done within 80 minutes on stage. So it's just this incredibly epic and deeply moving and affecting show.
this has to be – I'm familiar with your theater credits and some of the shows. That, I mean, you've done a lot of Shakespeare, so we'll certainly start with that. But you've also done Spring Awakening and Trainspotting.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm sort of curious, that and then any Shakespeare show you can think of you've been in. So that's the easiest way to cover most of them. But this has to be a very different and significant challenge, more so than almost any role you've had, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's my first one man, which is always a big kind of thing. And then, yeah, just the whole switching of characters, and because the character, my main character Tomo, is not from Ireland, he's from England. So, you know, that my base accent is completely off, and then I have to switch from an accent that isn't mine into a different accent, and then back into an accent that isn't mine, which was really tough to get my mouth around at the start, like, you know. So yeah, it's definitely the biggest challenge I've had so far.
Well, just be thankful they didn't like throw a New Yorker somewhere in there.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
yeah, that would give you some accents that you might not want to do. Now, is this your first time to Chicago in this performance?
It is. Yeah, I've never been before, and I'm loving us already.
Well, and you're going to probably put on a lot of weight while you're here, if you haven't heard that already. Just
oh, really?
Just from the food, just from the pizza and the food. We, you know, we might have some of those Irish oats somewhere, but you're going to have
there
some.
There is a lot that I want to try, so and as the gym in anticipation.
As well you should. The show is playing through November 11th. I don't know whether it'll get extended. I guess I should ask you, because people might hear this at any time. Any possibility of extension that you know of?
Unfortunately, not this time, because we head on to Austin, Texas after this.
Okay, so you definitely want to see this show by November 11th. And this, by the way, this is the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I, so there's a reason for it to be happening when it's happening
exactly
right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting there. I have to tell you, I just everything I've read about you, I mean, I've read reviews of your performance, which just talk about you as being deeply gifted, how moving this show is. It should not be missed. That's what some of the critics have said. We'll see what I say when we see it. But I know I'm excited. By the way, working with Simon Reed as your director, has he been a hands-on director, or is he giving you some freedom?
He very much wanted to, because he's done it so many times with different actors. He was so open to me giving my version of it, and he would just kind of tweak me in. But he was totally open for me to give what I wanted to give, to the point that we actually changed, because I wanted an Irish character, because no Irish person has ever done this before.
Ah.
So I wanted an Irish character, and he was okay with us changing one of the characters to Irish. So he's just been incredible to work with.
Do you ever get to say Daniel Radcliffe eat your heart out when you're on stage?
No.
I'm sure this is going to be incredible. Once again, that was a joke. I love Daniel Radcliffe.
Grace.
Yes, through November 11th, again, it's at the Greenhouse Theater Center, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. You know, it's the old, it's where the Biograph, not the Biograph, it's the old Victory Gardens Theater used to be just a few years ago. What a great space. Very intimate space. You've been in the space, quite intimate, right?
Yeah, it's really nice. I think it's going to be a really great space to play, especially for this show.
Absolutely.
Because of the intimacy of it.
And as you get ready to open it, as we talk, tonight. So we'll just put it that way. But through November 11th is when people can see it. Private Peaceful is the name of the show. You can get tickets. One website that they send us to is privatepeacefulusa.com. privatepeacefulusa.com. But I have a feeling you can go to the Greenhouse Theater website as well and get tickets that way. Shane O'Regan, congratulations on what will be a great run here in Chicago. Break both legs, as
Thank
we like
so
to
much.
Say, in the theater world. I'll look forward to coming to see you as well. And I hope you enjoy Chicago as much as I know we're going to enjoy having you here.
Brilliant. Thanks so much.
All right. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes, and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.